perspective. For fear was mother's mantra in my childhood. Her suspicions grew, matured, became so great, she consigned me, aged 8, into the gulag of grandmother's care, internal exile on my uncle's farm. I heard the eager trot of calves. They barged the buckets, spilling food across dark shadows. Uncle swung his stick, struck a feral blow. The nearest beast sagged like a swaying sloth. In frozen fear, I stood splay-mouthed, watched the eyes roll in these beasts, and beads of scared sweat erupt on his pale scalp. Time stopped until the calf regained composure, posture, slunk away. I breathed again, but felt this violence cure like hardening concrete. 2 decades on, I once attacked a door. It had become unhinged and fell upon our new-bought fridge. When temper flares, it starves the brain. In pain, confused, we strike to damage some or all that falls within our violent sweep. I see this clearer now at night, with tired eyes that cannot read, a mind that will not let me sleep.
Thank you, Ted. Next up we have Siobhan Campbell, who's going to be reading 2 poems for us. She had 2 poems shortlisted, 1 highly recommended. Siobhan is an award-winning poet in her own right, and the author of 4 collections of poetry, the most recent of which, as I mentioned, is here from Siren, Heat Signature. It's a gorgeous looking book. She has a very well garnered biography right here, with so many wonderful awards and publications that it's just going to take up too much time. And she's going to be our guest poet at the end of September, so we can get into things then. But for now, please welcome Siobhan Campbell.
Hi everyone, I'm thrilled to be here. So this is the shortlisted poem, Eve. The fields and the walls, the fields and the walls. We walk down to the strand following tracks of cows, who know where the stream flows in, who drink from the tribute stream. No one told you that you are made of this, but you know tuft and hollow, cowpat and thistle, the spiked and the soft, what gives and what resists. Wind-rushed dust fiends twirled in small tornadoes, reminders of other powers, unnamed but acknowledged. You are this. If you had to recompose, these would reappear. Landline bleached to a westerly sun, hedges leaning into shadow, the threat of hawthorn casting a curse for later. Shucked peas in a green popped mouth, stooks of turf footed to dry, so they will burn heat into the winter. And the horses, fen wide they breed horizon, flattening the fields and walls. You tucked into a ridge, maybe a lazy bed abandoned in famine. The horses' arrival, snort still they halt out of speed, half turn, a rearing eye roll, seeing what you cannot. Manes wet, tails high, and then the shift. They decide, against all odds, to graze, while your heart stores the flown proofs, the hinge between theirs and yours. You are not disturbed, but date this down as if a new year is not illusion.
Thank you.
heads to tails, enclave of the haggard, their dark pupils orbit in white eyes, as if they have seen the fall twice over and are bored. These are the milk cows, heifered once. They won't feel the tissued calf again, nor make moan in the birth stall. Their days have a shape beyond the sun, the milking shed that gleams its steely beckon. Moments when backs to the hedge, the dripping paw above them seems a sign that somewhere else there is another heaven, where a slow lowing may still rumble on, wending the sides of hills, finding the thorny gaps, a long flat bow that comes from the base notes that curls to a tongue of harsh. This is lowing. A sound that makes dairy farmers fret, and as it grows inside them like a tampering, they think of arrivals, returnings, and not just the sun or spring or birds back from overwinter, but nudging feelings out of a deep hold. The lowing wells until a crispness settles, when with their cows they know that they are hard to love, and that in every field there's some pretending.
Thank you, Siobhan. Okay, that brings us now to our competition winner, John Bowes Post, who's going to read a few other poems and then his winning poem identifications. Just briefly, John says previously at various times has been a medieval historian, a wages clerk, a manuscript curator, a parliamentary election agent, whatever that is, a head of a general hospital, and lives off the Bury Peninsula in West Cork near Castletown Bear. He's been writing poetry on and off, mostly off, for upwards of 50 years. He's been published in Ireland, England and Italy, was judged Canterbury Poet of the Year in 2014, and is very involved now in running the Hungry Hill Writings competitions and publications, which you can check out at hungryhillwriting.org. They've got the Poets Politics competition, which is becoming very popular. So it gives me great pleasure, actually, really on behalf of the glass artist Michael Ray, who's with us tonight, to present this to our competition winner, John Bowes Post.
Thank you very much. I'm almost, but not quite, overcome. I may become slightly overcome a little later. But as Paul said, he's given me a little license to read a couple of extra poems before the winning poem. But I realised when I was looking for suitable poems that one of the big themes that I write about one way and another is identities of various kinds. And this first poem is one of the type that I've done several of, which is having somebody in the past thinking about themselves then and looking back at the same time, which is slightly confusing for anybody hearing it and not being able to work it out on the written page, but I just give you that warning. Also, this first poem, I have been told it is an allegory of Brexit, and it isn't. But it's inspired by the great Celtic earthwork fort in Dorset, Maiden Castle. It's called, for want of a better title, Earthwork. It's breezy on the gatehouse, sword slung handy, leather shield, watching the car park. Marauders on a cattle raid, maybe, or families out with an English heritage ticket. I can't be bothered with either. The white thorn rows have run a bit wild, less palisade, more hedge these days. It wouldn't have done for my father, with his gates closed, a man every 30 yards, 100 men just for watching, and the shepherd's spears stacked handy. Maybe a Celt, but his mother came from the northern sea. We're all mixed. Two of my captains were slaves from the south, where it's hot, they say, where the oil comes from and the best blades. My eldest goes with a centurion. He's Roman. At least, he's from Artazat, and where the fuck is that? He's never been to Rome. She's not a camp follower. She brews ale and sells it in Durnaveria down the track. Why build a camp where we overlook it? But the Romans know their business, and he's an honourable man. The children will be Roman. Probably they'll open a bar in Aquasulis, or perhaps a tea shop, lace tablecloths and free Wi-Fi. Easier than guarding a fort. We've always had children's rituals, dedications to the fairest, to the druid priests. My father remembered seeing old women burning in a wicker urn to keep the Romans away. I've not seen that, and anyway, the Romans came. In the car park there's a children's ritual, ice cream from a van. Now the druids, all rainbow robes, sell bongs in the high street in Glastonbury. If I want healing or prayer, I go to a wise woman. Less mystery, but she's delivered 100 warriors wet and screaming, saved most of the mothers, and I believe in her poultices. We work with the Romans now. Better trading, more protection against pirates. We skirmished with them once, but times changed. No point in fighting with them. Not like the Domnonii. City and united, us and always will be. Romans are civilized, they tell us. Read and write, as if we don't. They leave fancy floors for archaeologists, and their coin is good. I'll stick with them, but I think it's going to rain. This next poem, also about identities, is called, for reasons which I hope will work out, George Washington's Axe. In Portland, Oregon. I can't remember which corner the bar was on. Park and Market, Broadway and Clay? It isn't there now. One cheap beer each for an hour, then back to the hotel. I couldn't stop the thunder when you were sleeping. I think I hear your voice, but it's only Lincoln's statue muttering about Day-Lewis and which of them is real. One alive, one a denated corpse, both swathed in assumptions. The room isn't there either. The place has been remodeled, not just refurbished. There isn't a 618. That cell, that horny box, is probably now just a space in the air by the lift in the fifth floor gallery. Snowflakes melting into wet sidewalks. An old man in red leans from a billboard and whispers something about you. I don't listen. No Samter is ever the same as another. The Do Not Disturb tags are a different colour now. The wet patches we didn't want the chambermaid to see have evanesced, like the torn rug and the dripping faucet. I'm staying there again, but it isn't your dent in the pillow. Teddy Roosevelt's getting off his horse, impatient, complaining that a bronze mount gets you nowhere and wondering if he really is in his America. There was a wounded chickadee. We were the only ones between the nest and the prowling cat that ever noticed him. But perhaps I'm remembering your pity rather than the bird, a metaphor hopping unfeathered under memories of trees. What does Elvis's own t-shirt, stained with his sweat, signify if the only provenance was from Colonel Parker? I bought it for you. Now you can get plenty on eBay. It was raining and we walked across the river, trailing wet footprints through Sears Roebuck for warmth. Sears and Roebuck wouldn't recognise themselves now in the multinational hedge fund that uses their names. I'm not sure if the elephant sculptor was there. It swings its trunk gently and swishes me aside from the path I thought we walked towards a new mosaic. We passed an antique store with a set of six shaker chairs. You said it was probably fake, an odd set of five dismembered and reassembled with inserts to look like repairs, each chair to the owner's mind, mostly authentic, like us. It feels like the same rain, but that's only remembrance. It's not the same skin. Those surfaces taut from your fingers sloughed long ago into the breeze off the Morrison Bridge. We had a cheap meal in Chinatown. You had paella, I had a weird lasagna, and we giggled as we argued. Spanish, Italian, Chinese, or what did it matter? You talked about ambience, but I think you brought it with you. In the drizzle, I'm counting our times here, always forgetting one visit or another. The townscape laughs as it changes. No matter now, it will always be our Portland, you said. And now come to identification with the winning poem, and I'd really like to thank John and Asprick for their total aberration in judgment, but I'll take the money and run. And this again, more obviously, is about identity, but it also reflects, as you heard, I'm a historian by training, and my realization that collections, large and small, do have a commonality about them, whether they're the Great National Museum or a shoebox under a bed or a fox in the attic. Identifications. This shoebox is its own museum, enclosing the same variety of odds and ends, artifacts, significances. The statue is from the Pacific, the notice says, beside the remembered stairs, just inside the lid. Ionic columns lead into a fold of tissue with a possibly Iron Age piece of pot from the garden. Inside someone's mother's prayer book, there's a cafe where the reading room used to be, but no books. The Rubens St. Christopher is the one Lucy was wearing when the train hit her. It isn't dented. He gave her a random stone picked up on Ben Bolden the day she proposed. The stone became a ring. She kept the idea of it in her underwear drawer. The stone is a stone, somewhere. The idea died when she did, and no one knows who he was. I like small town museums, not the ones with aggressive themes and interpretative graphics, but mere cabinets of curiosities. Five broken clay pipes found when they dug a new drain at the post office. Some Victorian fans given by Miss Farr. Miss Farr? Three album prints of unknown men with side whiskers against a church wall, looking exactly like the church wall now. So there's no information except that three men looked like that. And who they may have been is buried in the churchyard. There's a tag from a Roman shoelace, someone's assumed, but it's bent lead with fragments of fibres, and nothing to say. That ship that sailed into the bottle, 60 miles inland, isn't a good one, and the bottle is clean, not even fingerprints. Nine, yes, nine tiles from the old workhouse floor, salvaged when it was bulldozed for the new industrial estate, the derelict 60s one on the north side of town. Except the tiles could have come from anywhere that used red brick tiles for flooring. I can't see starvation, typhus or separation on these in particular. And there's a story not attached to that Bronze Age skull, which might have belonged to a warrior, or a potter, or a saint, or a thief, or a lover, who may have died violently, or not, near the play path by the chapel. The caption sets out meticulously what isn't known about him. There's no label on Lucy St. Christopher. She has no story.
Thank you, John. Congratulations once again. Brilliant. Okay, right. We're now running straight into the contributors to Five Words, those who have not necessarily won, but have partaken in the Five Word challenges we have here on a Monday night. And I have 9 people down to read from the book so far. There may be a couple more who are in it. You can't read your own entry, that's the only rule, so if you're coming up to read, please have a second one, maybe in the back of your mind, in case someone else reads the one that you have in mind. And I'm just going to call you up as I find your names. Rab Urquhart. Rabbi Urquhart is first up. Rab Urquhart.
What's the deal? I have to read someone else's poem. Okay, this was the winner from the 7th of November 2016. The words were train, clock, fish, croof, and puncture. And the winner was Thomas. Thomas told me his ambition was to win the Five Word Challenge 3 weeks in a row. He hasn't done it yet, but he's still trying. It was going to be a long journey, so we packed a hot water bottle in the glove box. He'd have taken the train, but he'd lost the ticket in the garden and resolved, oh, I'll take the car then. So there he was, ready to go. Last second he discovered a puncture, such an inconvenience at such a vital juncture. But he was a man of initiative, and he removed the offending wheel and replaced it with a stubby clock from the attic. This clock had been in the family for generations, developing mystical properties, and he found that as he reversed the car, with each backwards revolution of the makeshift wheel, he travelled several years back in town. So he reversed down the driveway, 1987, down the road, 1970, and the motorway disappeared beneath him, and he reversed onto this magic clock all the way to the coast, 300 million years BC, and there he saw evolution's ghost, the first fish out of the sea. He was far from home and from the job and interview he was supposed to be attending, but he had a while now to prepare. In the case of Ice Age, the coast and the glove box was still there. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a super one. That's a nice Paul Muldoon was here, really. So, yeah. Okay, so please make sure to tell us what the five words are before you read the five word poem, if that's okay. So next up we have Cedric Picon.
Was written by Alan Egan, and the five words were instinct, inclusion, afloat, wallpaper, positive. The title is Literature. If you can ignore the wallpaper outside Tesco, the ticket machine in Paul Street car park will tell you that change is possible. Some wait for a New Year's Day, a positive day. Why not January 28th, the year of the rooster and inclusion with the Chinese? Or stay afloat for a special anniversary? Why not right now? Trust your instinct, it happened within. Should you doubt, go to Paul Street and ask the machine, or simply look inside yourself.
Thanks, Eric. Next, actually, we have one of our judges who also has a poem in this book from last year, Alfred Mavinci.
I'm going to read Tamara Miles' poem. It was highly commended. It's called The Safety. My cousin, the five words, provoke, lock, salt, black, and conundrum. The safety. My cousin left his shotgun safety off, propped up against the house, and when his father saw it in front of me, He threw it far out into the lake and said, "That's one mistake you'll never make again." And as my cousin was brother to me, I had no other. I felt the shame and loss near as much as he. After that, he always seemed angry, easily provoked. Once, he offered me a motorcycle ride, and determined to hide a throat that raged and burned, I went. By the time we got home, I was wrecked with fever, spent, and assigned to bed with a gargle mix of salt and meds, and he was in trouble again. This time I was the cause. He was older and responsible for me, they said. Eyes near black with fury, he asked, "Why didn't you tell me you were sick?" "Because I wanted to go with you," I said, "and I knew you wouldn't take me if I told." It's one mistake he'd never make again. A conundrum, I guess, why, for love or other grown-up hobbies, we turn as reckless as a loaded weapon and end up deep in water we can't see through, locked down in mud and rust, where the fierce and angry gods have thrown and separated us.
Thank you, Patrick. Next, can we call on Nicola Roberts?
Okay, it's been really, really hard to choose because there's so many great poems in here. I think I'm going to read this one by Gráinne O'Connor, winner for the 14th of November. And the five words are seaweed, forget, trump, incompetent, and electron. And the poem is called Untitled. I hope I read this on the right rhythm now. Twilight roll limpets stuck round my shoe, like some sick toxic seaweed, stuck as I exit the toilet. I scrape and I shake, but I can't get it off. Stamping my feet only renders it deeper into shoe crevices, cracks. Soon it seeps through my sneakers. And I never say sneakers, because that is American. God, look what he's done already. Or what he's already done. The president-elect. Ron Burgundy reads from a fake teleprompter, but this can't be the news. America, what have you done? Facebook is asking. They squat and they squeeze, but they can't get it out. He's a poo they can't pass. They're rendered incompetent and did it all to and by themselves. As if Trump still has nothing to answer for.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Gráinne. Next we have Ben Burns.
I'm going to read one by Cathal Holden called Maria Matrim. I was here the night he wrote this and I thought it was great. The words were tectonic, greyhound, silence, engine, and frivolous. She taught children in the rubble, beneath the fallen lintel, under tons of dust and ash and grey, where they had played their frivolous orphans' games before prayers in the morning. Maria Matrim Gloria in excelsis. The bell in the chapel rang like a kicked dog and was silenced. She taught them mnemonics to remember conjugations and natural science, how the earth's mantle moves on its molten core, how tectonic plates shift like molting crabs, how the planet turns on its axis like a drive shaft, an engine of the glory of God. The siren sounds a greyhound's whine. The sun sets like a shot horse. The bell rings like a kicked dog. Maria Matrim Gloria in excelsis.
Thanks, Ben. Next we're going to have Max Creedon.
Go for vital? Untitled. The words of Trump, apple, river, snake, and love. Forget the garden myth. The tree, the snake, the exile, the loss. Apples fall. So once a river wove through paradise, so very long ago we can't recall how the garden gave us all. It formed us. From the jungle we were formed. Now paradise is lost, and nothing makes sense now. All separate, all atomized and separated, lost. And who's afraid of love, afraid to speak the word? Love that holds and binds, connects, like water, air and earth connect, like space connects when love comes, gathers all. For love has this one flaw, it can't exclude. Love only knows the all, the magic moment, when we all connect, love trumps, love trumpets, triumphs, and gathers all.
Okay, guys, next we have Grania O'Connor.
This is by Mary Nagel, and it won on the 27th of February. The words are May, sinew, saber, photo, and cold. Family photo. Twins in fringes aim plastic sabers at the camera. Their faces show braveheart in battle. They wouldn't even blink at a spillage of guts or fall for a bullet, but they'd bleed for us, their mammies and daddies, for blood is the beauty of war. The cold of the day is not betrayed except in sinews raised on my sister's hand. She is clasping her scarf, her eyebrows arched to emphasize an elegance acquired to distract from the creeping lines. Her skin had hid ropes all this time. May is losing temperance.
Thank you, Gloria. And next could we have Thomas Harris.
This is by Niall Herriot on the 30th of January this year. The words are hair, light, cosmos, music, and rain, and it's called hair. Does a hair hear the music of the cosmos, or just sit and enjoy the light rain?
Thank you. It'd probably be a good time to call Niall Herriot up.
This one's by Colm Scully, winner on 8th of August 2016. The words were friction, turbulence, volley, pregnant, and bombardment. It's called Olympic. I said I'd write friction. Stories of turbulent pregnancies ending in angry children called damage and uncertainty. Who grow up to be volleyball players, playing on the sands at Rio for Ireland against the mighty girls of Brazil, awaiting a bombardment across the net on Ipanema. Damage and uncertainty would be tough, toughened by long hours training on Dolignan Strand, in tricolour bikinis on winter nights. But strong opposition would be their undoing, losing 10-0 in the quarterfinals to the Russian girls, Testosterovich and Hemoglobovich.
Thank you, Niall. We just have two more on the list, and this is someone we've missed who's published in the book. So just two more people to go before the break, and then we'll have the open mic. So next up, Alexis Campbell Banner.
Sink, bird, sporting, leap, ingest, This was done on the 23rd of January by Margaret Creedon-Ashe, a poem artist. It's about a very cheeky bird. Sporty bird. Would I be in with a sporting chance to sink velvet lips on you? If I hover like a hummingbird to ingest each pheromone from you. She leaps right back in indignation with a weather eye firmly on him. You're more a bird of prey to me, so sink those talons elsewhere. Ingest me now, for I must have you, O sporting bird. I'll expire for the want of you. Desist, thou quare hawk, or I'll report you. You are a well-known predator, so save your soft paw.
Thanks, Alexis. Next we have Michael O'Connor.
I'll give the author at the end. The five words were calculation, several, avaricious, plum, and fluent. It's untitled. The plum hung plumly, fluent in its plumity, and next to it hung several more. Plumfluent, full of plum, a rapid calculation to gauge my avariciousness. Then I ate one plum, then another one. Plum full, and full of plum, I plumbed the depths of plumminess.
Thank you. Okay, so our last reader from the Five Words Anthology is Kieran McCartan. This was written on the 17th of October, 2016, by producer Walks. It's called Churches of Ireland. Dangerous ideas stall you, inquiring from books on a cursed index burning, not enough to dash the mould right off, nor travel the circumference to a daft conclusion, intrinsic to your argument, so you will ride on the wings of eagles to a logical conclusion. Supporting glances from a circumference eye, preaching from eagle lecterns is your call. Dangerous sounding daft from the pulpit, caking the mould from disused buildings, intrinsic to your speech, falling on blind guides, an overly familiar guest does its bidding. The roof obviated, dismantled in history, threadbare chimneys gauge the era too daft to record. Circumference of privilege, intrinsic to the heart of an eagle's pride, mouldy as it is, relevant to my purpose. History's deft hand recording the debacle. Torn out plaques visit their situation on innocent tides, bulging graveyards divest themselves of its sorrow. Getting more daft with an intrinsic season, eagles picking on carrion locked away, mould taking care of the rest. No one is indispensable, not even me.
looking at a circumference of global calling, bell tower defunct, daft in their usage, intrinsic to purpose, long disappear. The eagle, lectern, repatriated, mold needing cleaning, a forgotten act. What's the wisdom in recording these things? In memoriam of the oppressors, a daft exercise, intrinsic to our fabric, like it or not. An eagle rising from the flames, covered in mold since my last sighting, circumference of an intrinsic world is rich. Facade is to the extreme, appropriating windows for decoration, an intrinsic heritage lost, daft for safekeeping, appropriate eagles of a lost cause, mold infecting a circumference of stolen history, abiding on a mantelpiece of a huckster's delight, silent as the grave, a whore like the mold, skulking in darkened corners no one can reach. Death intrinsic to history, daft in its purpose, calling on egos to rise above the circumference, pieces of God, circumambulating the graveyard, paper and tape mercilessly calling the time.
Okay, thank you.